Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with self-love coach Danielle Burnock. Things happen in our lives that make us feel powerless. But Danielle believes that anyone can become a victorious soul by reclaiming what belongs to them, their value, their belovedness, and their God-given superpower. The Victorious Souls Podcast is dedicated to empowering you to rise up, reclaim, and embrace the change from survive to thrive as a victorious soul through the power of love. And now, here's that lady on the internet who loves you, Danielle.
Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with me, your host, Danielle Burnock, that lady on the internet who loves you, connecting you to the love that heals so you can love yourself from survive to thrive. And today I have with me Elizabeth Clayman. She is from the backwoods of the Bayou of Louisiana, which I want to ask her what that really means. She's an avid motorcycle grandma and a serial entrepreneur with a servant's heart. And she's an author and a speaker who's overcome multiple kinds of trauma, one that left her bedridden for 12 years. So thank you for being on my show today with me, Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I am so excited. We've been trying to do this for so long since we met on LinkedIn, and I'm finally glad we connected here with me in New Mexico in an RV and you there at home.
Right. So you've overcome like a lot of different kinds of things, but let's start with, tell us a little bit about your background and what is a bayou?
A bayou is a body of water that doesn't really move. It's just stagnant. And we have lots of like cypress trees that grow in and around the bayous. And it may have some current, but it's not a lot. It's really swampy. It's what you think of when you think of the swamp in Louisiana. And lots of alligators and frogs and lizards and snakes and all that kind of stuff in there. And that is home. That's what I call home. And I love it. I love Louisiana. And I didn't ever think I would leave Louisiana, thought I'd be there forever. God had other plans, lots of other plans, but you know, he only gave them to me in increments that I could handle.
And I'm glad he does it that way. Cause if he would have told us, you know, 10 years down the road, we'd all just be like deer in the headlights. What?
Oh, I would have sat down and quit. And I would have said, that's it. I'm done. I'm not moving from this spot. If he'd have told me ahead of time what was coming.
He is wise.
Yes.
He is wise.
Very.
So then let's get into a little bit about your background as a childhood, because you had trauma as a child growing up, and then you had more of it as an adult. But what happened in your childhood?
You know, I think I've decided the devil doesn't want me to do what I'm doing. And he thinks he's going to stop me. And I just keep telling him, you might slow me down, but you're not stopping me, because I'm going to keep going out and telling people about Jesus. So just not today, Satan, not today.
Amen.
But my childhood was, I would call it normal until I was almost six. Mm. I lived with my grandparents, who I thought were my parents. I called them mom and dad. My aunts and uncles were my brothers and sisters, and my biological mother was my sister, I thought. I was the youngest of five kids. My mom had me at just barely 20. She was 19 when she got pregnant. She just turned 20. And she was away at a college in Jackson, Mississippi. And I met this guy. I don't know. I don't know the story. I've spent my whole life trying to figure it out and find it out, but I haven't figured it all out yet. Jesus will tell me one day, but it probably won't even matter. So by then I won't care. Right. But she came home for Christmas vacation, and 3 days after Christmas, she started having really horrible pains, and they thought she was having an appendicitis. They rushed her to the hospital, and the doctor came out and said, it's a girl. Ta-da! The most beautiful appendix you've ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I just started rocking the world the day I arrived in it. Nobody knew she was expecting. She says she didn't know she was expecting.
I know other people have said that. I have such a hard time believing that. But
Me
she's not
too.
the only one who has said that, so.
I know. I just think that it's mind over matter. It's a matter of having the denial in your head that it's not, that's not what it is. I tried that with my second one. It didn't work for me, but my husband had just enlisted in the Air Force. He was leaving in 3 months. I had a 16-month-old, and God decided to give me another one. And I went to my OB to do the test because I thought maybe if she did it, she could change the results. I knew what the results were. I felt it. I mean, that's why I don't understand. I felt something different in my body immediately.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand not knowing, but there are a lot of people that don't know. And everything was fine. She stayed at home. She didn't go back to school. She went to work. And I was raised by my grandmother and as my mother. And you know, life was good for me. I was at home on the family farm, being a kid, running barefoot in the yard and hitting every mud puddle I could find. And everything was great. And then my grandfather had a massive heart attack at work and died instantly, just after I turned 5. Oh. And I don't really remember it. I remember being left at a friend's house and running and playing with their kids and having this overwhelming feeling of guilt and not understanding at a 5-year-old why I felt guilty, like I had done something wrong, but I felt guilty because I was running, having fun, and my family was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it always makes me sad to think, gee, that was my first memory of feeling guilty. That's bad. That's not good.
Yeah.
But, after that, my mom and my grandmother apparently didn't get along really well. My grandfather was kind of the buffer between them. And so my biological mom ran off and eloped with a guy a few months after my grandfather died, that she eloped with the guy that she worked with. And she came back and took all my stuff, put it in the car and left and went across the state. And didn't give me any explanation except I'm your mother, he's your father, no other questions. And then put me in daycare the next Monday. And I had never even been left in church nursery. I'd never been out of the care of my grandmother ever.
Wow.
Except when my grandfather died and I was at these friends' house. I'd been over there and played and stuff, but never put in a daycare type situation.
Yeah.
So that started some major abandonment issues and some, which I already think I had those because my biological father wasn't in the picture. And my mother has a lot of anger and resentment, hatred towards him. So I think I already had some of those.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about pre-birth trauma a lot because mm-hmm. that child in the womb feels what you feel. They you know, they experience what's in your atmosphere, what's going on around you. And there had to be a lot going on for me to have the trauma that I had. And in the home of my mom and my stepdad, life was just chaotic all the mm-hmm. time. My stepdad was verbally and sometimes physically abusive. My mom was emotionally abusive and on a few occasions physically abusive. She was she's very, very, they both were very much narcissist, and she put the blame for everything on me. And mm-hmm. so I carried the guilt and the blame for all of that, even as a small child. And the only time I was, if I was sick or school was out or I was just an inconvenience, I was sent back to my grandmother, which is exactly where I wanted to be in the first place. So that was my happy place. That is still my happy place. When they take my blood pressure at the doctor's, they say, go to your happy place. And I go to the sand pile in the backyard. That's my happy place. And, you know, my grandmother and I just, we were always two peas in a pod. We got along just perfectly. We had the same temperament, the same, you know, attitude and sassiness. And I adored, absolutely adored my grandmother. And then my stepfather had children from his first marriage, 5 of them, and 3 sons. 2 of which sexually abused me as well when I was 9, when they were living with us at the time. And I, you know, I went through life with that same denial process in my head. So I don't know what it is. And you may find this when you talk with people who have suffered abuse, and especially women who suffer sexual abuse. I find this a lot when I'm working with them, is it's something that if we don't say it out loud, if we don't put it into the air and the atmosphere, maybe it didn't happen, or maybe it won't hurt us as much, or maybe it won't, you know, we don't acknowledge it completely or whatever.
I think that's just human. I think that is just human nature, because if you don't say it, it's not real.
Right. Exactly. If you don't put words to it and verbalize it. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot. And that's what I did. I never said anything about it.
You know,
I
I'm
kept
thinking
it all
about that,
buried.
That, and it might come from our creator, because he created the world with words. And faith is,
yes,
faith speaks. So that might be an inherent thing that's in us, because we're created in his image, that we don't know how to operate or recognize. So we just, you know, mangle it like we do until the Lord teaches us better.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, and I thought I was going through my life, got married. That's a funny story. I met my husband downtown. I was bar hopping because I hit my teen years. I just rebelled. I was saved. I was saved as probably about 5 or 6 years old. My grandmother led me to the Lord, and she read me the Bible. She took me to church. She took me to Bible school. Every time I was with her, we were involved in church activities. So I had a relationship with Christ very early on. And I believe that was God's protection of me. That was him, you know, him giving me somebody that I had with me at all times, because he knew what I was going to have to go through. And so when we went through, when I went through all of that, I never said anything. And I knew if I'd have said one single word to my grandmother that my stepdad hit me, or that the words that he said to me, that would have been it. She would have taken me away, and that would have been it. I would have lived with her. But I had a half brother and a half sister that are 9 and 13 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I was their caregiver. My mother found her joy and her life in her work. So she worked as much as she could. And so I ended up with my half brother when he was less than 2 weeks old. And I was not barely 13. And I kept him for her to go to work.
Wow.
And my sister, and I had my 4-year-old sister at the time too.
Wow.
So yeah. And I was never allowed to participate in school activities or after school anything, because I had to be home to take care of them. And so my weekends were, she was home. So that was my time to get away. So when I hit my teen years, I just rebelled. Mm-hmm. And I was so backslidden. And I was downtown. It was August after I graduated in May. And this guy drove by in this truck, and I waved, and he did a U-turn and came back. And I thought, oh, he's really cute. And he's got an orange Chevy truck, my favorite kind of guy and my favorite kind of truck. Yes. So I said, he
oh,
said,
what a teenager.
Oh, yes, I know. And he said, I said, where are you going in? What bar are you going in? I'll go in, you know, wherever you're going to go in. And he goes, I don't go in bars and I don't drink. And I thought, he's weird. Okay. He's like, why don't you pull up here and let's talk. So I called my friend who was over talking to some guys I didn't have any interest in at all. I said, if you're coming with me, you better come on. I'm talking to this cute guy in the Chevy truck. So we pulled over and parked in the parking lot. There were actually a couple of other friends, one from my high school, one from his, that were over there. So there was him and his friend, me and my friend, and the two of them. That was August the 10th of 1984. The next 4 months we dated, we only didn't see each other one night in that 4 months. My mother decided he was the most awful thing she'd ever seen in her entire life. When I introduced him to her, he said, hi, Mom. And she said, like a, you know, cat when you make them angry. Uh-huh. And then she decided a month into us dating that he couldn't come back to the house. Mm-hmm. He was a danger to her younger children. I'm telling you, mental illness. I don't know. He'd done nothing. So we met at the road for 3 months. And then finally we decided we're done. We're going to get married. So we went, parked the truck on the road, went in to tell her we were getting married. And she said, this was Thanksgiving. She said, when are you going to do this? I said, after the first of the year, when everything settles down. She goes, if you're going to do it, why don't you just go ahead and do it? Why don't you elope? And I said, no. If you want me to go ahead and get married, I'll get married. And I'm going to sit in a pew. You're going to sit in a pew and watch me walk down the aisle. That's when I said sassy, I meant sassy. That's just who I am. So 2 weeks later, we got married in his parents' church, which we had been attending. And I rededicated my life to the Lord after I met him. And the thing that was different about him was his relationship with Jesus. And that was the thing that she didn't like, that she could not handle. So we got, and the wedding pictures, I look at them now and I just shake my head. Because my family looks like they're at a funeral and his family's all smiling and happy. And this December will be 39 years we've been married. So
well, congratulations.
Thank you. So that, that reset my relationship with God. I was very backslidden until that point. And, we have had an interesting life, to say the least.
Yeah, because you had two car accidents in there. Where did that come in?
Yeah, our first daughter was born. We'd been married about 3 years, and she was maybe getting close to a year old. And he decided that the money he was making as a mechanic was not going to cut it. It was not going to be good enough for his little girl. And so he decided to go in the Air Force Reserves so he could go back to school and get his degree. So he enlisted, and he enlisted December 12th. God surprised me on December 28th, which is my birthday, with our second child's coming along. And God's plan, not my plan, God intervened in that one. And thank God he did, because she's such a blessing. But so I have the 16-month-old, and my husband's leaving for basic training. And then he's leaving for basic training. This was all in December. He's leaving in March. My grandmother passed away in February. Oh. Bam, bam, bam. And I just thought, I can't do this. I can't do this. But I did. I leaned on the Lord and he got me through it. But in that, going into the military, he went back to school, got his degree, and applied to be a commissioned officer, became a commissioned officer, and we started moving. So our moves, we were, moving all over the country, and we bought a RV, a tow-behind trailer, as temporary living quarters for our family. And it also made for cheap, fun vacations when you're living on a military salary. Yeah, that's what you have to do. And I was homeschooling the kids, so I was only working part-time jobs or having little business, side businesses, as they call them now, side hustles here and there, to make ends meet. But we had gone, the two younger kids and I had gone to Louisiana and visited all of our family and everybody. Well, the family that still speaks to us, my mother and that side of the family doesn't speak to us anymore. Once I stood up and confronted the issues that I had in childhood, God told me they either need to walk in truth with you or you can't walk with them, because I've got things for you to do and I need to build you up, and I can't keep building you up while they're tearing you down. Because just as soon as I get something rebuilt, they rip it all down. So it's, so I had this dream about a path that went two different directions and I had to choose. And I chose to walk with God and to be all that he called me to be. And my mother and stepfather still have an open door to this day where they can get in touch with us. I'd love to see them. I'd love to talk to them if they're even still around. But I had to walk in truth and I had to speak the truth. And there's a great quote by George Bernard Shaw that says, if you're going to get the skeletons out of the closet, you might as well make them dance. Well, that's what I did.
And who was it that said that?
I believe it's George Bernard Shaw. I'd have to look it back up to be sure.
You said that so quickly. I had a hard time following you.
I believe that. And so I just get those puppies out and we dance. So, but my family's not dancing. They're not happy, but I had to do what I've been called to do. I had to follow the Lord. So anyway, we were on our way back from this visit to Louisiana, and we met my husband and my oldest daughter in Kentucky for a camping trip slash family reunion. All of his sisters and their families and his parents were there. We had a great weekend, and we were headed back to Detroit, which is where we were stationed at the time, just north of Detroit. Headed into Detroit and pulling the camper, by our 16 and 18-year-old daughter's driving his truck following us. And we get into construction, and the lanes are shifting and moving and everything, and there's signs coming up. And if you know anything about
sounds
the Midwest,
like Detroit,
there are two
yeah.
seasons. Yeah, there are two seasons.
I live
winter
in Michigan.
And construction. Yeah,
that's where I'm
exactly.
at. I know.
Winter construction and Orange Barrel Christmas was everywhere. I mean, it was everywhere. Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock on I-75.
Oh,
coming
my.
From Ohio into Michigan. Oh, yeah, it was a mess. Well, we were shifting to the shoulder of the road, and the semi-trucks were supposed to stay in that left-hand lane because they didn't want them driving on the shoulder. Well, the semi-truck in front of us never got over. He got to the bridge at exit 6, which is Luna Pier. You'll probably know it when I say it, but he didn't think he could clear the bridge because it was decorative on the side and arched over. He slammed on his brakes. And he stopped on a dime. And you cannot stop an RV pulling an RV on it. Well, any kind of RV, you can't stop it on a dime. Mm-hmm. And I was turned around to answer my son's question in the back seat. He was 11. And I caught out of the corner of my eye, my husband stomped on the brakes with both feet. And I thought, you can't stop the camper like that. And just about that time, it was screeching and crashing metal and smoke and just chaos. And I did not know what was going on. I could not figure out where I was. All I could hear was my son screaming at the top of his lungs, and I was trying to get to him. And then my daughter is jerking on the door of the Suburban screaming, are y'all all right? And I still can't even figure out where I'm at. And my husband crawls through the seats, lays down on the back seat, and kicks the window out with both his feet, tells our girls to get away, kicks the window, and they hit us. We hit the truck, the camper hit us, and then they hit the camper, and the camper hit us again. So it was bam, bam, bam. Three impacts, and we were doing about 60 miles an hour when we hit that truck. And everything was all in under your feet. The smoke was coming, airbags blowing up, and he kicked the window out, crawled out, got our son and took him over to the side where the girls were, came back and told me to crawl through the seats and climb out the window. I couldn't even figure out how to unbuckle my seatbelt. It was like an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. I could hear the phone ringing, but I couldn't figure out where the phone was. I didn't know where I was. I was just completely just dazed, in shock, really. That's what it was shock. So he crawled back in, unbuckled me, and gave me step-by-step instructions to get out of the car, crawls out the window and tells me to get on his back. Well, you know, the female in me, no, I'm going to hurt your back. I'm too fat. That was my first sound reasoning word that I said to him. He's like, just do it. And he never orders me around or uses that colonel voice on me because it wouldn't work very well. Well, if you wanted the opposite reaction, he could do it.
It's sort of like when you tell someone to calm down. You know,
yes,
they don't calm down.
Right, exactly. It's the opposite. Yeah. So I was like, you know, he put me on his back, carried me. So I didn't have my shoes on. I driven to Louisiana and back to Kentucky. My driving was done. I was reading a book, seat leaned back, still had my seatbelt on. But as soon as I got to my kids, it was mom mode kicked in then. Mm. You know, over that, you know, comes mom, and I start checking the kids. Oldest daughter has some cuts and burns on her arms from the airbag.
You all got out of the vehicles. I mean, that's fantastic right there. So you
guys
survived
this thing. Yeah, we didn't have to use the jaws of life, thank God. But my middle daughter looked fine. She didn't look like she had anything, any injuries at all. And my son said his stomach hurts. I pulled up his shirt, and he was black from his chin to his knees. Mm. And I was like, before I could even think about him having internal injuries or what was going on with him, I turn around. My husband was on the phone pacing the interstate between the wreckage and talking to the base because he was supposed to be on a reserve weekend the next day. And he's like, I'm not going to make it. So
I have a really good reason, too. Do you want to go on
exactly.
FaceTime and see?
Yes. I've never missed a reserve weekend, but this is going to be my first. So, and then all of a sudden he just falls out on the interstate. And I'm like, What are you doing? So I run over to him and he's like, I just needed a break. I'm like, are you kidding me? A break? I'm having a little traumatic moment here. Could you not take a break? What is wrong with
Let's
you?
schedule that break for later.
Yes, exactly. That is not on my itinerary.
I'm in mom
He says,
mode
I'm
here.
okay, I'm okay. But the worst part was when I was talking to his mother on the phone, because my oldest daughter had called her to tell her what happened. And I was talking to her on the phone when I said, Arnold just fell out on the road. I have to go. And I hung up on her. And
Oh.
now I think back as a mother of grown kids, I think, oh, that was horrible. But everything was just
Yeah.
happening so
So
fast. So
did your son have internal injuries?
by the time we got him up off, then him and he was fine. Then the cops showed up and say, get away from all the wreckage because the propane bottles on the front of the RV were crushed. One was under the guardrail we were standing by spewing propane, and the other one was on the back spewing propane. And with all the gas and oil on the ground, he said it could spark any minute and go up in flames. Get away. And then dog mom kicked in, and I'm like, not with my Boudreaux in the car, it will not. So we run to the truck, and both our dogs are in there in their kennels. They pick up my daughter's dog kennel, the policeman and my husband, and I'm like, my dog, my baby. I mean, he was my, but he's the only dog I've ever had that was mine. Mine. And so I tried to pick up his kennel. And when I did, I started having trouble breathing. I had this severe pain in my chest and trouble breathing. And I thought, it's just my asthma. So one of the truck drivers that stopped to help us, God bless him, crawled into the Suburban through the broken window my husband had broken, got my purse and brought it to me, risked his own life to bring me my purse so I could use my inhaler. And I'm using my, it's not helping, it's not helping. They put us in ambulances. They take us all to the hospital. We get to the hospital and all the diagnoses start coming in. Daughter, cuts and burns. Middle daughter, fine. Son, nothing. No internal injuries, nothing. Not even a scrape, a broken anything, just the bruising. My husband has a little bump and a cut on his leg, but he's okay. And I told the doctor, I'm like, great, let's go. Because if you know me, if it comes to a hospital, if I'm not there to see a newborn baby, I'm out. How soon can we go? I want out. Let me go. I'll do anything. I had a back fusion, and the doctor told me I was walking down the hall and climbing stairs 2 days after the back fusion. And he said, I got a guy with big muscles and tattoos behind me over next door to you, and he hasn't even gotten up to go to the bathroom. I'm like, yeah, I want to go home. Let me go home. I want to go home. So there's
Motivation, nothing like
yes.
motivation.
No, I love home. Home is great. That's why I just live and drive in my home. So we just are always home. So,
Oh, this sounds like
but
that may
they.
have come from you had that home before sex, that you had that safety and
Yes.
you've recreated it with this.
Right, exactly. And that's where I feel the most comfortable. I can be the most me is home. And that's, I'm absolutely positive that's it. But they told me you have a broken sternum that is separated, and to have taken a blow that hard on your chest, on your to break your sternum, could have damaged your heart, could have damaged your lungs, or could have damaged the sac around your heart. So we have to put you on the cardiac ward and monitor you. So 5 days I'm on the cardiac ward being monitored. My husband never left the hospital. He stayed right there with me, slept in the chair in the room. This horrible man, my mother wouldn't let come to the house. This horrible person. Yeah, he's still that horrible too. He slept in the chair. He gets up the next morning. He has no pain medication. I don't even have Advil. I mean, and he was in the same accident I was. He took the same 60-mile-an-hour stop too. But he stayed right there. My in-laws fortunately got back on the phone with my oldest daughter and found out where we were and came and got the kids and took care of the kids. And so I, after 5 days, they said, you've got damage to both your knees. We know because they're both 4 times bigger than they should be. And we know you've got the broken sternum, your heart and everything looks fine. After I got home, I went back to the hospital a couple of times with passing out and pain levels going so high that they made me pass out and just really awful. And why that's going off, I'm sorry. But went ended up probably 6 months or so into the doctors and the therapist and the this and the that, I ended up with a ruptured disc in my back that was crushed and crushing the sciatic nerves going down both the back of my legs. Two discs in my neck that were herniated and pressing nerves going down my arms. Concussion, the broken sternum, which is horrible and takes forever to heal, and damage to both my knees from hitting, they call it dashboard knees actually, because they hit the dashboard in the center console. Mm-hmm. Even though the airbag's deployed, when you hit three times, the airbag goes down after the first hit. It doesn't, mm-hmm. it takes that first impact. So I was 100% disabled and bedridden at the ripe old age of 38. I ended up filing for my Social Security disability, and I asked the lawyer when we were going before the judge, I said, what do you think my chances of getting my disability are? And he goes, well, they don't make jobs for mattress testers. And that just crushed me, because I had always been this self-sufficient, independent person. You know, I mean, military spouse, my husband's deployed for, you know, September 11th and deny fight over Bosnia and all these things. He's Desert Storm, Desert Shield, all of them. Mm-hmm. And I kept it all together. I was there, and I'm flat on my back, and I can't do anything.
Well, how'd you make it through that? How did you recover from that?
Fortunately, my husband has very, very strong faith, and he and my son every night would pray, would lay hands and pray for me. And wow. They'd say, "That God's going to heal you, Mom." And I'd say, "Guys, I don't think so. I think this might be how it's going to be." And they'd say, "No, Mom, God's going to heal you. God's going to heal you." And every time I went through another surgery, they would pray over me. My girls, just my middle one, especially my surprise child, she was 16. She stepped up. And she started taking over the meal cooking and keeping the house clean, helping her brother with school. Just amazing. And my son felt this huge draw to music and started taking guitar lessons, was a natural, had a God-given gift we would have never known that he serves God with it to this day. It is just, to me, it's so amazing to see that everything else that God was doing, not just what he was doing in me. Because up until that point, God had been telling me, be still and know that I'm God. And my protest was, I don't know how to be still, because I'd been staying one step ahead of that pain my whole life, mm-hmm. and ahead of that brokenness from my childhood. I just kept, you just keep moving fast enough, you keep doing enough, you volunteer enough, you work enough, you just do and do and do. I didn't know how to be still. I learned how to be still. And that verse actually means be still and let him be God. Don't be in control. And I was a massive control freak. And so I had to learn that I'm not in control. I couldn't control that accident. I couldn't control my parents. I couldn't control the damage it did to me. But I could heal it. I could let God heal it. And then I can let him use it to heal somebody else. And I just surgery after surgery. And my ninth surgery was in 2016. The wreck happened in 2005. In 2016, they had me on so many pain medications just to get through from one day to the next.
Wow.
They could not control my pain after that surgery. And I was going into shock. My teeth were chattering. I was shaking, sweating. And I just looked at my husband and I said, I'm done. I'm not doing it their way anymore. I'm done. When I get home, I mean, there's got to be another way. So when I got home, I started praying and petitioning the Lord. Lord, show me how to get out of this bed. Doctors kept telling me, well, this is just going to be your life. This is just how you're going to have to live. And, you know, there's plenty of things you can do from the computer. And I'm like, no, God called me in 2002 to women's ministries and to help women and empower them and give them the courage to tell their story. He spoke that to me as clearly as I could. As I'm sitting here, he confirmed it in someone from church that I didn't even really know, and then confirmed it to me in scripture. I knew that was my calling. And I told them, I said, no, he didn't tell me I was going to lay in a bed, be on a computer. No. And I'd fire that doctor and hire a different one. find another one, find another one. So when I got home, I just started petitioning the Lord, how do I do this? What do I do? And he said, cut a pill in half and take a half a pill and mark off every day on the calendar that take a half a pill less. Then next month, cut another half. And we did that month by month until I got off of all of that pain medication. And then it was sit in a chair for 5 minutes and lay back down. Sit in a chair for 10 minutes and lay back down. Stand for 5 minutes. Get on an exercise bike for 2 minutes. Just slowly, little by little by little.
Little by little is very powerful.
Yes, yes. And even when you're in it, you don't realize it because you just do it. And I'm just, God, tell me the next thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And just give me one step. I just need one stepping stone. What do I need to eat? What alternative doctors do I need to see? Mm-hmm. Do I do this or do I do that? And I just, everything was a yes or a no, a yes or a no. And I just followed step by step what God told me to do. And slowly but surely was able to get back on my feet and start pursuing what God had called me to 12 years earlier. And the moment, I'll never forget the moment that God spoke through somebody to tell me it was done, was I met this lady through this internet thing about asking questions. You put your information in there and then people would send you questions. They'd email them to you and then you'd answer the question. And this is like in 2017. And this lady from Africa, from Johannesburg, Africa, contacted me and asked me a couple of questions. And she wanted to get on a Skype call. And she got on a Skype call with me. And we were just chatting and talking and you know, talking about God and how good God is and everything. And I told her my story. And she said, did you say 12 years? And I said, yeah, 12 years. She goes, biblical numerology, 12 is the number of completion. It's finished. And immediately it was done. I knew it was done. I knew God had done it. He brought me back. Now, I still have chronic pain every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't have chronic pain and I have to do things differently than a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
But God put me back where I could serve people and I could share those stories and tell them that God is bigger, God is greater, and he can do it.
When did you start riding motorcycles in there? You ride a motorcycle. I mean, you were laying in a bed for 12 years, and now you ride motorcycles, and you travel around in this RV, which you were doing before. But, I mean, you ride motorcycles. Tell us, how did that come to be?
It just always has been. I grew up on a farm, so we had four-wheelers, three-wheelers, and I was driving a tractor by the time I was probably five. And I've been on the back of my husband's motorcycle since I was 18. Mm-hmm. So when we were raising kids, we didn't have a motorcycle because we didn't feel like it was fair to jeopardize both their parents on a motorcycle. But now they're grown and they're independent. They have their own lives. And we got a motorcycle for our 30th wedding anniversary. And that was our gift to each other. And it's on the trailer behind the RV. And we're going to be riding in the mountains pretty soon. But I love it. It is just, it's so relaxing to me. Just the wind and you know, we take all the precautions. My husband was the safety manager for the base for years and years and years. So I say I'm married to Mr. Safety. So you've got your leathers and you've got your helmet, you know, you got all the guide protection and all that. But a lot of people at churches that we go to are like, honey, why are you on that bike? You know, you're going to get hurt. And I said, you know, I can't live my life that way. Mm-hmm. If I was going to live my life that way, I'd say, well, I'm never going to ride another Suburban, never going to pull another camper. I'm never going to follow another semi truck. I'm never going to drive down another interstate. You can't live your life that way.
Right.
You have to live your life and whatever you enjoy and brings you pleasure, then do it. And I tell people, I have a big cross on the top of my helmet. And I tell people, I'm like, that's my one-way communication with God. That's when he downloads the best ideas to me because my brain's in neutral. I don't have anything that I need to be thinking about.
Mm.
You know, I don't have to care if there's dishes in the sink or if the next chapter in the book needs to be written or the deadline's coming up. It's just, my brain is just free.
That's awesome. Well, you have 10 books, but you have something to share about one of your books. So tell us briefly about the 10 books, but then share what's the new and exciting stuff with your one book.
Yes. Well, two of my books are just like when we had Create Space before it became Kindle KDP, I put a couple of books together that were articles I had written when I was doing natural health and medicine, because I have a degree in naturopathic medicine that I don't use unless my family needs something. But otherwise, I just don't use it. But I put those together. But then I've been in, let's see, so those two, that makes eight. So I've been in seven anthologies, two of which I collaborated myself. So I've gotten the authors together and put those together. And then my own book, which is Beauty Rising from Brokenness, I brought a copy to show you guys. And this is the story of my childhood. This goes into the details. And I leave you hanging with that car accident to know what happens next. And that'll be the next book coming out, which is Warrior Rising from Ashes. And actually, I self-published this in 2018, November of 2018. And I have been out there working to get this out and get it in front of people. And it's finally been picked up for publication through Leadership Press. And the second book that goes after it, which is Warrior Rising from Ashes, which is about the car accident and the fight to come back from that. And so those have been both picked up by Leadership. So I'm adding some more stuff to Beauty Rising and reconstructing it a little bit to make it new and fresh, but it's still my story. And so we're very excited. And we're also going to do courses that go along with it to help people who are dealing with trauma and abuse and those kind of things, to help them through the courses as well.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And five of those books are number one international bestsellers. So that's major exciting. And I was speaking at an author's about my author's journey, and he was going, that's not real. All that number one international bestselling, that's just a numbers game. And that's just a, you know, you put your book under basket weaving or whatever. And I jumped on my phone real fast. I'm like, looking. I'm like, nope, not basket weaving, not a one. Every one of them's been under a real, really what they are, Christian self-help or, you know, Christian ministry. They're all what they've been. So no, I didn't cheat. Those are really real international bestsellers.
Yeah. Oh, well, one other thing I want to ask you is you have been sought out by the Department of Defense. What for? Why? How does that happen? How? Well, your husband was in the military, which I didn't realize that before. So does that have some part to do with it?
Yeah, his job in the military, he was always a reservist, but he did the same job for the Department of Defense that he did for the reserves. So he worked for the Department of Defense Monday through Friday, and then the reserves on the weekend, doing the same job at the same desk with the same uniform. So it's kind of confusing, and you know how they love their acronyms. He was an ART, Air Reserve Technician. So that's, and so that kind of gave me an in to of people to know, to get to speak in a situation like that. But I spoke on PTSD and on overcoming PTSD, because I've overcome a little bit of PTSD.
A little bit, yeah.
And I still deal with a little bit of PTSD. Especially like being in a car. Not so bad in the motorhome, because I feel big in the motorhome. I feel like I'm, and on the motorcycle, I'm the back seat, so I don't really pay attention to what's ahead of us. I just let him deal with it. But if we're in the car, I can get a little squirrely when we get into some heavy traffic. So I still deal with some of that.
Yeah, well, the thing with traffic is there's all these other people you don't have any control over.
Yes.
It's like,
it's that control issue again. Yeah.
Well, it's, and that feeds into the fear, because you don't know what they're going to do. So you can't even, there's only so much you can do to protect yourself. Like I have a grandson who's just starting driver's training. And so I keep bringing up about defensive driving and what that means. It means you're paying attention for the people out there that are not paying attention. Then you can avoid accidents because you noticed something when someone else wasn't paying attention. So,
That's and that important. Brings me to our second accident as well, with, you know, when we hit that truck, I saw it coming, at least out of the corner of my eye, I saw it coming. So I always had this fear of being behind somebody. Well, then in 2019, we were stationed in North Carolina. We were headed to Michigan to our granddaughter's high school. We were going to watch her march her very last time in high school, in the high school band. And we were stopped for a wreck on the interstate. And my husband jumped into the center shoulder And I said, what did you do that for? He goes, the guy behind us isn't slowing down. The next thing I knew, he hit us. He hit the concrete barrier. He hit us, slammed us into the 3-quarter ton truck, into my door beside us, went another 200 feet and hit 2 more cars. So 5 vehicles, 6 people in the vehicles, 1 person injured. Anybody care to venture a guess? Devil can slow me down, but he can't stop me. So now I have this fear of somebody behind us. So even if I see a slowing down in the front, I'm still doing this because I don't know if something's coming from behind me. And this kid was texting. He was texting, and he must have been doing 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
And we were all stopped for this wreck ahead of us. And he just slammed in and slammed into us. He hit us so hard, the front tire on my cheek broke off and shot 3 lanes across the highway.
Wow.
Literally broke the axle and shot 3 lanes across the highway. And then this will give you a little insight into my stubbornness. I was scheduled to speak.
You're stubborn? Really? You're stubborn? Huh?
Stubborn and sassy. I know. It's a deadly combination.
And God loves us anyways. And he helps us to soften and change and all the things.
Yes. Yes. And then sometimes I think he gives us some of that because we got to be tough and we got to channel it
for what it's for. It's got a purpose.
Exactly. Because he doesn't do anything without purpose. Yeah. Everything is with purpose.
See, another form of stubbornness is tenacity.
Yes. Yeah, I got that too. Double dose. But I was scheduled to speak at the Republican Women's for South Carolina, the entire state of South Carolina, at their prayer breakfast the next weekend. And we got hit, and I had a severe concussion and damaged my knee again, I believe. Oh, and ruptured and completely destroyed my rotator cuff. My doctor told me, you are not going to speak this weekend. She said, just come in on Thursday and we'll talk about it. This was on Monday after the wreck. We had the wreck on Friday. And I said, okay. Went home, canceled the appointment for Thursday, rescheduled it for the following week, and went and spoke. We had to go speak in the rental car because my car was totaled. We had to drive it over in the rental car to go speak. And I spoke. There are pictures of me with my arm in a sling. I'm going up between sessions, laying down, putting ice on my head because my concussion, my head hurts so bad.
Wow.
But I just, this is what God called me to do. And devil could slow me down, but he's not going to stop me. And I went back into the doctor on Tuesday and she said, man, you had spoke, didn't you? I'm like, maybe
I've been talking a lot of times between then and now.
Yeah, I speak all the time. People say, I don't know how to shut up.
Wow, so, that's powerful. The powerful of, that's a warrior's heart, like in the name of your next book, but a victorious soul, you know, that's a victorious soul, one that fights for the victory. So
yeah,
that's amazing.
You know, and I can't stand it when I see people sit down and have that victim mentality. You are not a victim. You're a victor. You're a victor in Christ. That God made you a victor. You are
people
not
have
a victim.
To learn that. Just saying that doesn't make it magically happen. People have to have that work done on the inside we can't just say, don't be that way. We have to do the work like you did, the little by little by little by little by little for 12 years.
Yes.
So.
And then, you know, God woke me up one morning at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, it's time to write your book. And I'm like, but I don't want to. I don't want to write. I don't like to write. Write. And then he wouldn't let me sleep past 6 a.m. if I didn't write. And I'm not a morning person. So I got up and I started writing. And I wrote that whole book in probably in a matter of a month.
Wow.
God, the Holy Spirit just poured it out of me.
Yeah. When the Holy Spirit does that and he empowers you to do that. I mean, my 2 paperbacks I have, they took me 18 months from start to finish to publish. Mm-hmm. But I have a new one that I just released October 4th that God gave me the idea in June and published it October 4th. I did it with my grandson together. And that was a total God thing. So I validate that God thing. When God gets in there. And if he wants it faster, he'll get it faster. If it doesn't need to be faster,
Right.
I mean, my other ones didn't need to be faster.
Exactly. And I did not have as easy a time writing Warrior as I did writing Beauty because the Holy Spirit just poured it out of me. Warrior, I've had to work more for that. And that's what I
Well, it
tell
goes
people.
with the
I'm sorry about
title.
being,
I mean, what you just
yes.
said.
I had to fight. Yeah. And that's why we named it Warrior. And actually, my husband and I ride it together because we both had to be warriors. We had to fight insurances and doctors and lawyers and judges and all that. Trucking companies that cause accidents. And it was a battle. We had to fight for our marriage. We had to fight for our family. It was a fight. We had to be warriors.
Well, that's powerful. Before we tie this up, is there anything you want to make sure that the our listeners hear from you today?
I am a storytelling coach and I love to help people tell their stories. I don't want to see another woman leave this planet without leaving her story because your story, that's your wisdom that you've gained in living the life that you've lived. And if you take it with you, it doesn't help anyone. I love to see women empowered to step up and tell their story. It doesn't have to be from a stage like I do. You can write it in a journal for your family. You can record it on your computer or voice record it on your phone, just so your family has it. There's so many questions I have for the women in my life that I can't ask now because they're gone. And so don't take that with you. Write it. And if you have a hard time writing it, contact me. We'll do it together. Because I love to help you write your story. And if you're struggling with trauma or abuse or any of those things, I help women who are struggling with those things by writing. We write it and then we go through my rising blueprint and we go through and we pick out the traumas and we figure out what is that triggering in me now? How is that, like the PTSD and the trucks and, how is that affecting my life now? And then we seek God to reveal it and to overcome it and to break it down and evaluate it and then work and walk through it. And it's always easier to go on a journey with somebody else that's already been down that path.
Amen.
So if anybody out there is listening and you'd like to have a helper on your journey, just please reach out to me. You can find me under Elizabeth Klamon. I just put my name on everything and that way it made it easy. It's Clamon, Elizabeth Klamon. And you can
Amen.
email me at Elizabeth Klamon or social media. I'm on all of them at Elizabeth Klamon. And just reach out to me and I would love to help you. I also have a school called the Expert Storytellers Academy. And you can just look up at the Expert Storytellers Academy. And I have free master classes on there. I have free workshops. I have a couple of courses that are very inexpensive for women who want to get started and aren't sure that they want to have that hand holding quite yet, but they want to get started.
I
Because I'm
understand
all
that.
about stories. Yes, I'm
Yes,
all
that
about
sometimes people
stories.
they need to be in that private place. So you've provided ways for them to have privacy until they're ready to connect with someone else. That's a good thing because people dealing with trauma, oftentimes it needs to start in a place of privacy where you have your courses and stuff. That's why I say I have my books because it's just you and the book. Just I have courses
Right.
and you people can do it in the privacy of their own home and then reach out for help with you when they're ready.
Yes, if they're ready and when they get ready and they want to, they can always reach out to me. I'm here. I'm here somewhere in the, four corners of the world, but you can always get in touch with me.
That's awesome. And you already answered my last question was how can people connect? You already took care of that. So thank you
There
for
you
sharing
go.
your story and your warrior spirit with my audience today, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. I'm glad we finally nailed it down and got together where we could be together at the same time.
Yes, audience. We've been trying to do this for months and months and months, and something kept happening that got in the way, and we'd reschedule, reschedule, reschedule. But we have been able to do it because you matter. You who are listening, you matter. And this story matters. And if you need what Elizabeth has shared and her expertise, and reach out and connect to her, get a copy of her book. And I want to thank you, audience, for being here with us today. And until next time, I love you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Victorious Souls Podcast. You matter and you are loved. We'd love to connect with you further, so please visit us at danielleburnock.com and grab a copy of Danielle's free audiobook. And remember, only you can change your life. No one can do it for you.